Okay, today is July 21st, 2021. This is an interview with Janet Battsley. And if I mispronounce that, Janet, I'll give you a chance here to correct me. This interview is being done for our Academic Staff Award Winners Oral History Project. My name is Troy Reeves, and I'm with the University Archives inside Steenbach Library, usually. But since we're in a pandemic still, I'm doing this interview remotely via Zoom. So Janet, so to help me with pronunciation and also with sound quality, can you say your name and spell your last name?
Sure. My name is Janet Battsley. It's spelled Battzli.
Great, thank you. And I've got the sound set, so we should be being picked up nicely at this normal speaking level. So Janet, we spoke for a few minutes before we turned on the recorder. And I just want you to know that I'll be going through these questions mainly in order that I gave them to you, but we also might jump around depending on the answers to your questions. So the first question is a big broad one, and that's what brought you to UW-Madison?
So I first came to UW-Madison. I'm an alumnus for my undergraduate. So I first came to Madison in 1985. And I remember coming in on East Wash and at night and seeing the Capitol lit up. And I wasn't a student yet. And the beauty of the city, I was just struck by the lakes, by the excitement, the buzz of the university. And being from a suburb of Chicago, I never really had been in an academic town, you know, a place where there was lots of ideas and lots of talking and lots of, you know, just energy and buzz. And so I came here after attending my first 2 years of undergraduate at UW-Platteville, actually. And so I was a transfer student and I was looking for that buzz. I was looking for the energy and excitement and opportunities. So I transferred the fall of my junior year. And so I was coming here for all of that. I was also an athlete. So and at the time, there was the UW gymnastics team was still on a roll, and it was the practice gym was in the Red Gym right on Lake Mendota. So I was really drawn to that. That was exciting. And I had already talked to the coach, and they were game to take me on. And so I came for that. And also because I was very interested in plant biology. And so there was no major except agronomy at UW-Platteville. So I came for the horticulture program here, which is really, really a great program. And so I did all that. And then, you know, as a bonus, I realized, oh my gosh, this is a research university. And so I got into a research lab too, as a junior, which was super exciting. It was like my first step into science. And so I was so lucky to have a really excellent mentor, and who really showed me what science was about. You know, before I just really liked plants. That's all I could articulate. And so he showed me about, and his name is Fred Bliss, really well-known horticulturalist. And I worked in his lab on a research project. And that really launched me both into thinking about what I wanted to do as a career, and eventually, came back here to UW-Madison. And it took me 15 years. I met my husband here as an undergraduate, and we got married right after I graduated in 1987. And we took kind of a really big roaming journey through the East Coast through going to Washington, D.C., and I worked there at UW or at the National Arboretum, and then got my master's degree out there. Then went back to graduate school at University of Illinois. Had two kids. Then went for a postdoc at Michigan State University, where I learned all about science education. And so I fell in love with science education as married with science, like the inquiry and questions into science and just STEM education in general. And I was hired at UW Madison. It took us 15 years to get back, and we were dreaming about this the whole time we were on this journey around the US. And it was like coming home. It was such a wonderful, wonderful journey back here. So I took on the position as the associate director of the BioCore program in 2002, with big shoes to fill. And because BioCore, as I knew it from outside, from the science education realm, from my postdoc at Michigan State University, BioCore is the model of excellence in undergraduate biology education. It was, and I remember the first couple of weeks I walked in the door, and I was told by, a colleague at the time, "This is really a jewel. You've inherited a jewel." And I didn't know what that really meant at the time, but now I really do know. I'm so lucky and fortunate to have been hired at that time, and all of the incredible opportunities to work with these motivated students, really engaged faculty, and the opportunities to apply my interest in plant biology and ecology in BioCore Prairie, which is, I thought, wow, all of these pieces kind of coming together, and opportunities to have a really like a agile and flexible ability to create things, programs, create, come up with research questions in biology education, innovate curriculum, and actually implement it. So that's what brought me here. And also my husband had the opportunity to be to opportunity for job opportunities in his field in satellite remote sensing imagery, and then my two kids were really born and raised in or raised here, weren't born here but raised here, and loved it. And now my daughter is working for the university. So that's a long answer to the question, what brought me back, or brought me here, but happy to be here.
Great, thank you. I wonder if you could talk a bit more. I know you said that you didn't know for sure about plant biology until your mentor kind of showed you, but you must have had some initial interest in plant biology, even before you got to Platteville. So, what factors in your life led to your research interest?
That's such a great question. And I was lucky enough when I was really young to be introduced to the out of doors. And even though, my home was in a suburb of Chicago, it was really a wooded area. It was really a beautiful outdoor area. I was just drawn to the outdoors. My family always went, we spent the summers in Door County, and where I spent just a lot of time playing outdoors. And most of it was in wooded areas. And I particularly loved early spring, the spring wildflowers. And so we were close to the Morton Arboretum, which we frequented. And I just didn't even know that you could actually do this as a living, just be around plants. And I was just, I loved being outdoors, but plants for some reason they were just like a calling to me. And also I never thought about this, but my mom had a really green thumb, and she had a kind of a greenhouse area. So not only did I appreciate plants, but I saw them grow over time. And I was like, wow, these are alive and they've changed. And it's almost like I made friends with all of the plants that were around me. So when I was kind of thinking about going to college, I wanted to go someplace where I could at least think about that. And I just remember my high school had somebody, a recruiting person from UW-Platteville, and they said, oh yeah, they have plants there. And I liked Wisconsin already because we had spent summers in Door County. So I thought of Wisconsin, the whole state of Wisconsin, I imagined was all like Door County. You know, it was just like this outdoor place that you do things outdoors and there's lots of plants there. So I was just completely naive. I had no idea, but I just followed, you know, I was lucky enough that there was not a lot of like my parents were encouraging of that kind of exploration. So I didn't have like you have to be a, you know, X, Y, or Z. So I just kind of followed my nose, but once I got here, the natural areas of UW-Madison, that's actually something that drew me here. I don't think I would have come if it was an all urban campus with no natural areas. And the lake absolutely drew me. So yeah, I think that's really that was a big piece of why I came here. I don't know why I love plants. I just do. It's the biology of it, of
Sure.
course.
Right. Thank you. So I wonder, you mentioned, I believe you said Fred Bliss as a mentor, and you mentioned a little bit as to why, but I wonder if you wouldn't mind elaborate. I'm always interested in mentor and mentoring, so I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit why he was such a great mentor.
He was just great. I remember, when I got here, I had already taken some introductory classes, and I knew that there was such a thing as plant genetics. I had had a job as a kind of a groundskeeper at the Ball Seed Company, which was in West Chicago, where I took care of their farm trials. And there was a research scientist there. This was when I was in high school. There was a research scientist there that had done her graduate work. I didn't have any idea what that meant, graduate work. But she had a PhD and she was a plant geneticist. And so I knew that word. I knew there was such a thing that a job called a plant geneticist. So I looked that up, and sure enough, Fred Bliss was a plant geneticist. And so I don't know if this was just, I walked in to campus and I took a graduate level plant genetics class. And within the first 2 weeks, I went to Fred Bliss's, Fred Bliss was the instructor and said, I don't understand what's going on here. And I knew it was way over my head, but I guess I had the audacity to enter his office and say, I don't know what's going on here. I ended up dropping the class, but he invited me to come and work in his lab, which was a strange turn of events, because I was failing that class, Troy. I had no idea what was going on. I didn't know anything really about the underlying biology of genetics. I didn't understand cell division. I couldn't grasp it. I loved photosynthesis and all of the physiology, but I couldn't understand the plant genetics. And he took me on. And what he did, he treated me as if I was a graduate student, I guess, at the time. he respected me. He respected even my ability and not to understand, you know, that he respected the fact that I said, I don't understand. But didn't force me to follow directions or follow rules. He instead invited me to think, just share my thoughts and think. And I was just like, somebody cares about my ideas. Somebody cares about what I think. That blew me away. And I remember he had just gotten a big grant, an enormous grant. It was called the On Farm Trials. And where he was working with farmers to do, to basically take some of their experimental protocols and actually insert them in mini plots on farmland. And so he was going to this kind of conference or meeting, and I remember it was out in Spring Green, to start this project. I had absolutely no idea. And I was like, who am I to even, he invited me. He didn't tell me this is part of your job. He actually invited me like a colleague and said, I really think this would be an excellent opportunity for you. And I'd like to invite you to this meeting, this conference. And here I was like a junior in college. I had no idea. I was like, okay. I was completely, you know, out of my realm, but I felt so respected and affirmed. And it was completely engaging. And so I spent that summer and then the next summer working for him, being the assistant for this on-farm trials. And it was messy work. It was, you know, in the middle of a farm field with my hands, like, you know, rubber gloves up to here, mosquitoes everywhere. It was like one of the jobs that you remember to not take again, because it was just off. It was really hard, uncomfortable work, but the concept behind it was really engaging to me. And basically it was working with nitrogen fixing, snap beans. And I was engaged in the question about rhizobium inoculation and the dose response of the plants to rhizobium inoculation. And this is what I ended up doing my graduate work on. I shifted. I wasn't working with agricultural plants, but I ended up spending my master's degree at University of Maryland, and then my PhD work at University of Illinois, working in woody plants, because I went to the National Arboretum to work as a research assistant after I worked with Dr. Bliss. And then I learned about woody plants and I was smitten, but I was curious about, well, why aren't there more woody plants that fix nitrogen in this temperate climate that we have? Because there's all sorts of tropical plants that fix nitrogen and are nodulated by rhizobium. And so really I took what I learned during my undergraduate and I pulled that with me into my kind of what is now called a gap year, which I just thought, no, I'm just working. I don't know. It was just, you know, development. And I pulled that into working as a research assistant. I would never have had the skills if I only had taken my undergraduate coursework. I would never have had the skills to get hired at the National Arboretum if I hadn't worked in Dr. Bliss's lab. And then I gained those skills and the Arboretum, I was hired as a federal employee right out of my undergraduate at the National Arboretum because of that experience. So it was really life-changing. And I came to understand what it meant to be a good mentor, to collaborate, to do science and have questions and, actually do the science. That was really an amazing experience for me.
Thank you, Janet. I might ask a little later, or if we do a follow-up about, how you've paid that forward being a mentor. But I do want to ask now about sort of the other, sort of the marriage of science and education. So you talked about a postdoc at Michigan State that really, helped with that, but I wonder if you could talk more about your interest in science education.
It actually is, now that I'm kind of putting these things together, it actually is very much connected with my interest in science, and the scientific process. So when I was in graduate school at University of Illinois, I was a teaching assistant, much like, all graduate students, and I taught one of the biggest courses at the U of I. It was Biology 100, and it was introductory non-majors introductory biology course. And during that time, I was also, a graduate student going to conferences. And because I was a TA, I went to a workshop at the Ecological Society of America meetings, and the workshop was all about active learning, active and engaged learning, taught by or led by Diane Ebert May, who I didn't know at all at the time. And as she was talking about being curious and using your scientific intellect and your ability to question about learning, but using the same skills as we do in our science to inquire into student learning, she caught me right there. I was thinking, I've been thinking about why my students that I'm teaching either get it or don't get it, or are engaged or not engaged. But I've never asked why. Why are they? So that whole idea about being curious and asking questions, and using the same kind of, kind of grooves I had laid in my science, pivoting that and using that in asking questions about student learning, that kind of excited me. And so I did a little experiment when I was in graduate school. I did an experiment, and my mentor, my teaching mentor at University of Illinois, who was fabulous, he let me ask questions and try things out in the classroom. And so I did. And he was super affirming. He was really, really, his name was Ed Dole. And he was very experimental in the classroom too. So he let me try things out. At the same time, we were using Wisconsin fast plants, which, there's a whole story. I'm now very, very indebted to my wonderful pal, Paul Williams, for that. But I was first introduced to Wisconsin fast plants teaching at University of Illinois. And the students were tasked to, come up with experiments. And so I loved watching them ask questions and be curious. So both of those things, both me asking questions about student learning and then watching students develop their own scientific inquiry, that was very exciting. And at the same time, I went to my international conference. I went to a couple of these during my time at the University of Illinois in my specific research area. So basically, it was all the people in the world that were doing research on the specific area that I was doing research on. And I compared the size of that conference to the size of the class that I was teaching. So I was teaching a class that had 500 students a semester enrolled. And I went to a conference, a world international conference that had 80 people in the room. And I thought, impact. I loved both research areas, and I spent some time actually doing research in my biology, which was nitrogen fixing woody plants and their and the ecophysiology of nitrogen fixing woody plants in riparian or river ecosystems. But I couldn't get over the difference in that I was the numbers of people that I was meeting, the types of impact that I could have. And I really started to think about what do I want in my career. So that was a big shift. And so I had the opportunity once I finished my PhD, so Ed Dole, who was my teaching mentor, he was an academic staff at U of I. He actually didn't have his PhD, but he was given the opportunity to finish his PhD, but he needed a teaching buyout to do that. So I was hired full time to teach in his place. So as this nascent new PhD, I was standing in the biggest lecture hall at University of Illinois, teaching 500 students at his time. And I thought, I'm either going to love this or I'm going to hate it. And so I spent the year after my PhD, and I had an infant at that time. I had a 3-year-old at that time. I was like, I'm either, and my husband was finishing, he was doing the same thing, finishing his PhD and working. And I thought, I'm going to either decompose and just, have to check out, or I'm going to love it. And I loved it. I loved it. And so after that, I actually sought out Diana Burbet, and I took a postdoc at Michigan State and followed her. And turns out that was a really good decision because she introduced me to. She's also a UW alum, and she had connections to BioCore through Ann Burgess. And so she made those network connections possible so that when the job opened, when Ann Burgess, my predecessor, retired, I raised my hand and I applied for the job. So that's kind of the transition story. So I mentor students in science, their undergraduate research, mostly out at the BioCorp Prairie, but some in our physiology or plant biology or cell biology. I'm pretty broadly trained in the science side of things, so I can mentor undergraduates, but my specific area of research is biology education research. So I still pursue it, even though my job title wouldn't allude to the fact that I do research and I publish in that area, but I do.
Great. Thank you for that. So now, I'm confident we're going to need a follow-up interview. So I'm just saying that right now,
Oh,
because there's things I want to ask, and I want to ask them while they're fresh in your mind, or at least things that I think we need to ask right now. And one of those is, we don't know who's going to listen to this and in what context. So you've mentioned BioCore several times, and this kind of leads into this question about describing what you do. So let's start by saying, how do you describe, if somebody says, what's BioCore? How do you describe that to somebody?
Well, it's the Honors Biology program at UW-Madison. And actually, it took me a while to answer that question because I can get into the weeds pretty fast. But it is the Honors Biology program at UW-Madison. And it is very unique. And it's a program where students are not only trained in biology, but the process of science and how we know what we know in biology, but it's also a community of students that is developed over 4 semesters. So students get to know one another and work together and collaborate over half of their college education. So that's what it is. It's classes, it's a curriculum, but it's also it's full of co-curriculars. It's kind of nested in a co-curricular experience and community that makes it really special and unique. So that's what I would answer.
Okay. And then I know you've talked about this within your answers to the other questions, but then when someone, if someone ever asks, and if not, I'm asking it, like, you're currently, at least according to the award, you're the interim director, distinguished faculty associate, BioCore curricular program. What does that mean? How do you describe what then you do within BioCore?
I do a lot of different things. And so as the director, I am the lead administrator, with all of the administrative duties and efforts, and I represent the shared vision of the program and engage in, program development, both current and then envisioning future development of the program at the college and at the institutional university level. I do that. But then I do a lot of stuff in the program itself. So I do teach undergraduates. So I have a fairly big, in terms of my weekly efforts during the academic year, I teach a lot. I interface with students a lot, and especially as an honors program, I really pride myself, our staff really prides themselves in the connecting with undergraduates, connecting with students directly. And so the face-to-face connections, the interpersonal connections we can make over 2 years really expand, because typically those connections that we make draw people back in, even as they're in their senior year. So those making of connections, so through our teaching, through advising, through mentoring students, both in their undergraduate research projects, but also in leadership, we really focus that we've got a whole bunch of co-curricular programs, and I personally lead our peer mentoring program, lead and advise in peer mentoring, our peer advising program. That is really important. Our alumni networking programs, and so that's one aspect of what I do. The other aspect is faculty professional development and teaching. I do a lot of observations. I work with faculty to develop curriculum, work with TAs in professional development. So all of those things I'm doing, on or off during the week, during the year. My work is really seasonal. Academic year, I'm doing all my teaching, and doing all that other stuff. Well, and then in the summertime, it's more administrative and also doing lots of mentoring of students, projects, things like that.
Thank you. So I want to ask a sort of a sub question within BioCore too, because you've mentioned a few times BioCore Prairie, and the fact that we're in a city, but we're not a complete urban university. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about BioCore Prairie and its importance to your work and how you feel it is important to the students.
Oh wow. I talk about a jewel. Remember that? So that's what I was told when I first arrived. And oh, the BioCore Prairie is absolutely a jewel. We and my colleague Seth McGee and I basically inherited the idea of the prairie before it was a prairie. So Ann Burgess and Kurt Kozlowska, our two predecessors, had gotten in on a opportunity as an academic program to take on the management and stewardship of university land in the Lakeshore Nature Preserve. It was previously called the Campus Natural Areas. So when we started in 2002, this area wasn't a prairie yet at all. It was an old field that was used by the West Side Ag Station. And so it was a soybean field and a dumping station for the underburden of the hospital that like all the soil dumped there. And so it was just at the beginning. And so Seth and I worked, mostly Seth, did the heavy lifting, but we worked together with both the Lakeshore Nature Preserve, their new staff at the time, to create this outdoor classroom, this outdoor space. It's about 12 acres. It's right, we say it's the base of Picnic Point, but it's sandwiched between Picnic Point and the Eagle Heights Community Gardens, and it has a sign that says BioCorp Prairie, established in 1997. So they got the approval in 1997. We took over in 2002. And so for this last 20 years, we actually made a prairie, which is so exciting. It's such an amazing thing. And it's now a destination place for the Madison, both the academic, the university community, but for all of Madison. I mean, it's really it's beautiful right now. But for us in BioCorp, it's where we start. We say, kind of as our byline, everything comes back to the prairie. So the very first day of the very first class, students are getting on bikes, bus, walking. They walk out to the BioCorp Prairie, and we meet them there at the stone gate, right there. And I greet them, and that's where we start. And it's a rich ecosystem, much like all of biology. So we use it kind of as a model to be thinking about both big things and really small things. We come back and use the prairie both in our BioCorp 382 class, which is the main class I teach. It's our first laboratory course, ecology, evolution, and genetics. And so they do research projects there at the prairie as their first introduction to science. And then we bring back the prairie in lecture classes. We bring back the ideas that we've learned about collaboration, about wellness, about the human condition and our connection to the environment. We bring back all sorts of themes about diversity, and about how we think about science and the uncertainties and the messiness of it all. We can always bring it back to the prairie in the next 4 semesters. So it's really an important, and boy, was it important during the pandemic. It was the only place we could meet in person with students. And even during last year in the fall of 2020, we masked up, we figured out protocols, and we did it. All of our entering cohort of 2020, they got a prairie experience. That was kind of our non-negotiable. So we, pleaded with deans and everything to make sure that they could do their research project out in the BioCorp Prairie, and they did it. So it's a really, really important place for us on campus as a program, but I believe it's also become a very important place for our Madison community and for the university. And so I'm really proud of what we've done out there, and our legacy out there, and what it will be. It's gonna continue on well past, when I leave and when my colleague Seth leaves. But I think we've really created something beautiful and amazing. So
That's
yeah,
great.
it's BioCorp Prairie.
Yeah, thank you. So I have a I need to wrap up here. So first off, as I said before, I'll reach back out to you. Probably won't talk about the release form until we do this follow-up interview.
Okay.
But I do want to, since what I always want to do in these interviews is if there's anything on your mind that's kind of been percolating now that you've been, talking, answering questions for about 40 minutes that you'd like to say in closing, understanding, of course, there's a follow-up interview, but understanding that sometimes what you're thinking about today may not be what you're thinking about when we meet again. So do you have any last final thoughts or anything you'd like to say before we wrap up for the day?
I do want to make sure to make time, and maybe this is the follow-up interview, to talk about one of the interesting questions about relationship with between faculty and staff. I've had some really amazing experiences here as an academic staff. So I'd love to be able to talk about those things, recognizing that in my job as an academic staff, I've been able to have both agility and flexibility to be able to create programming. And I don't know if I'm unusual in that. I don't know if it's because of what BioCore is and my unusual role or unique role, but I've had some amazing experiences doing work outside of BioCore, especially within the realm of teaching and learning. So I would love to be able to talk about those types of things in a follow-up interview.
Great. Yeah. I've typed that stuff out. And so I'm going to actually wrap up and stop the recording for now, and then we'll talk for a couple minutes before I have to move on. So this concludes the first session of the Oral History with Janet Battsley. Janet, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Today is July 29th, 2021. This is the follow-up interview with Janet Battsley. This is a virtual or remote interview. I'm in my home on the west side of Madison. This interview is being done for the Academic Staff Award winners Oral History Project, and my name is Troy Reeves. So, Janet, as we did with the first interview, for sound quality purposes, could you start by saying your name and spelling your last name?
Sure, happy to. Janet Batsley, spelled Batzli.
Great, thank you. So we didn't get through all of the topics for our first session, but there is a couple of follow-up questions from the first session that I'd like to start with. So I want to start with you talked a lot about mentoring and being mentored, and I wondered if you wouldn't mind starting off by elaborating a little bit more on how you mentor or how you feel you mentor and if that has changed over time.
Yeah, that I love the topic of mentoring, and because I feel really lucky to have had a wonderful, amazing constellation of mentors, and I've been influenced by all my mentors. Of course, you learn from who you've been taught or mentored by, and watching them, and that's kind of just seeps in. You don't really. I wasn't doing it intentionally thinking about, but I certainly admire and respect my mentors, so the question about how I mentor is really influenced by how I was mentored. And so the common characteristics that I think almost all the mentors that were highly influential for me, what they had is made me feel that I was respected and competent, actually feeling that I had a voice, and them actually being curious about what I was thinking about. And so that was one really important thing that I try my best in bringing to my mentoring. The other thing is autonomy. You know, is there any room in this relationship for my mentee to be autonomous, to kind of guide the conversation, guide where they're going. And so autonomy in the questions they asked, and it all depends on, of course, what our mentoring relationship has and what the goals are. But for instance, I've got a couple of mentee now, undergraduate researchers, and also I've got some diversity, equity, and inclusion interns that I'm working with. And in that topic in particular, I don't consider myself an expert. I'm mentoring from a place of, I think, more kind of my gut and my and helping them connect with other people as well, not just myself. But one of the things that's really important, I think, in mentoring is that there are goals. There's some common goal setting, and within that, autonomy to switch paths if we need to. So checking in and making sure that the mentees feel encouraged and supported, and that they feel like they can direct where they're going based on whatever the goal is. And so we generally start out in these conversations is, where do we want to be? Where do we want to be in X period of time? And then let's co-create the route to getting there. And so we spend a lot of time talking about goals, but yeah, that's a really, really kind of broad way to talk about it. But respect, feeling competent with a voice, and having autonomy and goal setting and direction, I think is really important in mentoring, how I try to do it.
Great, thank you. I also love what you said, the your constellation of mentors. I may end up using that. I'll give you credit.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, I really, they're stars.
Yeah,
They're my
yeah,
stars.
yeah. They're stars, and they're diverse, and they're not always in communication with each other, of course, because they may not know each other, but they're in your constellation.
It's interesting too, as I continue on in my career, I found that I've reached back for help from those mentors, and for very different reasons. But it's just so wonderful, this idea. And I don't know about you, but I feel like that's where I'm shifting and turning in my career a little bit more. The mentoring is becoming more salient than even like the formal teaching or anything else I do. So.
Yeah, it's always been, and I think because like you, I've had great mentors, so I've tried to, pay it forward, if I can use that cliche, yeah, I think as time has gone on, it's become more important. It feels more important to me to connect with students and others that way. So thank you again for that answer. The other follow-up was you had mentioned, I think you even mentioned it at your work. I can't remember, sorry, I can't remember where you were out before UW-Madison, but I think you mentioned Paul Williams and Fast Plants even before you came here. But I wonder if you would talk a little bit more on how Fast Plants and Paul Williams influenced your work and has affected your work, either before or while you've been here.
Yeah, I would love to, because Paul is actually, I think of him in the constellation of mentors. I consider him, one of my mentors, and in kind of a way that is kind of an unusual way. So I did first learn of Paul when I was a teaching assistant at the University of Illinois, and so we were using Fast Plants when I was learning how to teach, and in particular learning how to teach with inquiry. And I think, actually, now that I think of it, teaching with inquiry and discovery-based mindset is very much the way that I also mentor too, in giving students, that respect and listening to them and not shutting down their ideas right away just because they may not at first glance make sense to me biologically, you know. And I started doing that. I realized when I was working as a TA because of my my teaching mentor at the time, that's the way he taught. And so I learned how to teach through this kind of mentoring model, almost like a coaching model. And that's the way Paul teaches too. And so when I arrived at UW, I immediately recognized his name as a former BioCore instructor. So I was kind of, I inherited this history of faculty that had been affiliated with BioCore long ago. And so Paul actually showed him up in my office and I was like, oh wow, you know, here you are. Thank you so much for producing fast plants. And then I went to a couple of workshops, and we fell into a friendship. And you know, after a while, in 2009, he had some ideas. We had ongoing conversation, and he helped us develop a really innovative lab on plant genetics and quantitative genetics. And it was an area that was no roadmap for us in terms of looking at other curriculum. It's not searchable, you know, if you will. And so it was something that I really wanted to dive into. BioCore is kind of an innovation incubator in terms of curriculum, and it's one of the reasons I came to UW in the first place, to really work on things that were truly, they were difficult to teach, they're difficult concepts to understand, but they're part of sometimes the what I call the tacit curriculum. Like you just expect students to come out of a biology education understanding that things vary, that biological organisms vary. Genetically, we vary all sorts of ways, but they don't necessarily. And we find ourselves scratching our heads going, I thought they would know that, but they don't. And so there's a lot of challenges in teaching genetics. There's a lot of challenges in teaching quantitative genetics. Why are we so diverse? And that was the nut we were hoping to crack with this new innovative curriculum in plant genetics. And so I worked with Paul. He actually not only helped us develop the actual organisms that we were working on, because he bred them so that they were just finely tuned. It was the only line through fast plants that we could actually, you know, work with that would actually be able to be practically used in the classroom, but also allow this autonomy for students to ask their own questions. So I actually didn't myself completely understand all of the biology that went into it. So he helped me understand that, and he was very compassionate when I didn't understand. So he helped me in that, and then I helped him come back to the classroom that he hadn't been in for, you know, a decade or two in a formal classroom, actually teaching. And we called it Paul's sandbox. We introduced, you know, his sandbox of ideas that are stripped away from kind of any of the formalities of higher education. They're let's actually play with ideas. And it was super cool, Troy, just to watch him in action, but actually also watch him when he didn't quite know what to do. And he looked to me to help, you know, with the timing and recognizing students actually had to go to other classes. And this wasn't all Paul's, you know, sandbox dream world all the time. So we helped each other, and it was just the beginning of a really beautiful relationship. And he ended up teaching this unit with us. We published together. We actually disseminated the curriculum, you know, nationally. and actually did some research, biology education research on it. And he was with us all the way. And it was really, we brought in graduate students and postdocs to help. And it's about 10 years of work. And it was just a wonderful thing to be vulnerable in the classroom together. And he really inspired me in how I approach science and science education with kind of that open beginner's mind. And to play in a sandbox, I was so lovely last week to see him up in the BioCore Prairie and coming back to be with us and talk with us. And so I'm just deeply grateful to Paul in all sorts of ways. So.
Thank you. So those were my follow-up questions. There are some things that you wanted to talk a little bit more about, but I think those will come through in the remaining questions we have. So my next question that I had on the original topic list was, how have changes in technology changed your work?
Yeah, and it's funny, Troy, when I first looked at this question, I always kind of laugh about technology with my another mentor, Diane, about how the technology of wheels on chairs, is the most important technology. The fact that, we can swivel around and look at each other and, we can walk around and connect. And I'm assuming technology meant more about like computer technology and that kind of, but I just wanted to clarify that. And that, there's technology in connecting people in any way we can. And I think that is the thing that I continue to look for ways to connect people. And technology has helped, especially in this last year. We were so concerned about how to connect people. COVID disconnected our community, our learning community, not only with student interactions, student instructor interactions, but our teaching community here at UW at large. And then, in my smaller bubble in BioCore. But our ability to teach and to be inspired and mentored by our other instructors. I'm involved in the planning committee for the annual Teaching and Learning Symposium. We had to think of a completely different way of how to connect with our fellow instructors and share ideas. That was really challenging, but we figured it out. We did it. We had three wonderful symposia this last spring. Changed it up its schedule, but we did it online. Online conferencing has absolutely changed how I work, how I think about work in the future. And the pandemic was a huge pivot. It was a threshold that we kind of had to get over. And it was and I liked, I don't want to be too Pollyanna-ish here, but it does seem like it's a portal for new things. It took things away. And so, but I really want to try to look at it as a portal of new ways that we can use without exhausting people further. So that's one thing. So Zoom obviously was great. The other thing is, and you of course would understand this, our library system, the technology, and I realize if we can't walk into a library the way, I'm used to, I miss that, browsing, but the library system technology is amazing. It's different than the stacks, but the fact that we can access almost everything and our students can do that too has changed the way I teach. It changes the way people write. It's changing our electronic communication. So that's been a big deal for me. Of course, electronic communications with emails and text and cell phones and how fast we can communicate. In this last year, for instance, my teaching team, just of one course, BioCore 382, that I teach each fall, I've got five TAs, five undergraduate TAs. So I've got 10 people in my team together with our lab manager. And in one 3-hour class meeting, we could be spread across 2 acres of the BioCore prairie and trying to communicate and teach at the same time as students are coming up with ideas and taking data and figuring out their methods. So being able to text and even FaceTime over space and time, that's been really interesting. And also using internet while we're out in the field, we're using iNaturalist so the students can ID plants that they've never seen before, which is pretty cool. And the last thing I really want to get at, and you might understand this too, is I'm concerned a little bit about e-documentation. When I came to BioCore, I was very fortunate to inherit basically the BioCore history and whole documented with all of the historic documents, press releases, rosters, photographs, all of these things. I have that in a nice, neat file, both electronically and then in hard copy. With e-documentation and in administration, it's so much more efficient to do all the email and all this stuff. But oh gosh, I'm worried about the history, if that's just going to evaporate because of it. So it's really easy to create and share with Google Docs now, but now we have this documentation and we don't know where things are anymore. Now it's not even on a hard drive, it's out in the cloud. How to connect those things? We don't have anybody doing that data management. I'm really concerned about that. Institutional memory just so.
Yeah, yep. We battle that every day at the university archives.
I bet.
Institutional memory and how to gather and preserve it in a digital age. The
And that's one of the reasons I actually consented to do this oral interview.
Well, I'm glad you did. Just the technology question, I always keep broad just to see how people answer it. So, I mean, there certainly are things that I think you're going to answer, but I also just enjoy hearing what people think about, like what comes to their mind when I ask that question. So thank you for that answer. So you've talked a bit about COVID just in your last answer, and you talked a bit about it in the first session. But I wonder if there's anything else you want to say about how did or has COVID-19 affected your work?
Yeah, like I said, just the loss of human connection. I know my students and our staff, faculty staff, just when we went in March, there was just this quiet, and it was really, really noticeable. Just we were concerned about the loss of connection and community, and it happened. It happened. We tried to keep it going as best as we could, but that happened. So there was some losses. So losses in connection, losses in our ability to actually even hope to achieve some of the learning outcomes that we set forward, that are part of our curriculum. I noticed, in our students and myself too, this loss of attention and focus. And there was this perspective that there was more work, but actually it probably wasn't more work. But it just felt like it, maybe because people, I know the students weren't going outside. And we developed a whole program, our BioCore Adventure Club, surrounding just getting students outside. When they said, I asked students, who's been outside in the last 3 days? Only a third of the hands of students in the class went up. It was remarkable. So it was Huge. And the other thing that was really interesting is we do a lot in the classroom. We can teach in three dimensions. And I noticed, especially when we're teaching outside, we're teaching, with five senses, our smell and hearing things and even tasting things. We do a lot of eating. We commune over food. None of that, it evaporated. And so I think of this as kind of a sensory phase shift, like from 3D to 2D, like the computer screen. And then this loss of senses, and it wasn't just the COVID smell and taste senses. It was just this loss of sensory. So just a lot of those losses, and of course the amplification of inequities and all of those things, for students, for our faculty that are already compromised in some way in health. And then watching that slip. There were some silver linings, of course. And I think, of course, I valued being with people more and more, and that was obviously shown when we could take our masks off again. I couldn't wait to just hug people and shake people's hands and be with people in person. So, but I think valuing those people, valuing people and what they bring to a situation, and valuing the friendships, and our staff, that was really it's really heightened now, and I can see it. Other ways that we did things, we just created. It's just amazing what we created in a short period of time. So that I really value that, and it shows that just the human instinct of resilience and creativity, and the value, it particularly because we can set a lot of those innovations and creativities in motion again now that we are going back in person. But I'm worried. I'm worried. I went and delivered a book to that we're all reading now, this Promoting Inclusive Classroom. I went and delivered it at the homes of some of our faculty. They're really worried about coming back for all sorts of reasons. And so I'm just trying to deal with that uncertainty. This is going to be a year of transition that I don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. And I hope that we just don't have to face the illness and the issues that we did last year.
Yeah, there's certainly uncertainty in the libraries too, both individually and collectively, particularly as the numbers now are starting to tick back up. I know we could probably talk more and probably should talk more about COVID, but I want to make sure that some of these other questions get addressed. I'm skipping the order on a question because last time you said you did want to address the relationship between faculty and staff. So the question is, do you think about the relationship between faculty and staff? And if so, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's I saw this question immediately, and for some reason it made me smile because I think about it all the time. I work with a lot of faculty in both professional development and in also in, my service commitments. It's really salient right now because in my current position as the interim director, there's faculty governance guidelines that mandate that my position should be a faculty position. So that's actually why it's interim, because we're trying to figure out how an academic staff person can actually fill this role as the director of a small program that is part of a college. So I think about it a lot. I think my first experience with the big experiences with understanding the faculty staff dynamics was in the teaching academy. And so I was lucky enough to meet all sorts of faculty from across the university through the Teaching Academy when I first entered it. I can't even remember the year now. But I then was asked to be on the I think it's called the Executive Committee or something of the Teaching Academy, and then quickly took on the position of co-chair of that committee. And it's a really interesting co-chair model of faculty and staff. So both years I was the co-chair with a faculty member. And it's a really wonderful community in where I personally felt that a lot of the decision making and the direction and the innovation was really co-created. But there was a tremendous number of conversations about this kind of tiered and feelings of a very tiered hierarchy at the university. And so I was privy to a lot of those conversations and thinking about, the feeling that there are places in the university where it's faculty only, whether it be committees, but I also recognize there's places where it's academic staff only too. And I appreciate both sides of that. And I am now in conversations in my current position where it is faculty only and then me. And so that's a really rare opportunity to think about this relationship with faculty and staff. And I've had some really wonderful mentors in that particular role. And I'm going to name Brad Hughes as one of my mentors in that role because he was in the same position a lot of the time. And so that was that's I've I'm navigating it. It's a place of belonging that you have to navigate. And at the beginning, and Brad says, well, you have to act like you belong, even when you're the only person in there that is of a different, titling or something. I need to cultivate that. And I'm doing that as I'm continuing forward. But also I'm learning from some of the my co-chairs. One of them is Nick Bolster, which Nick and I founded the Madison Teaching and Learning Excellence Program, MTLE. And that program was really interesting because it followed on one of my experiences as a leader for an NSF program, the first four program that Diane Ebert-May was the PI for. It was a development program, professional development and teaching program for postdocs. So these are people that will become faculty or academic staff. They're in a pivot point of their career. And so MTLE was really developed in that model of this pivot point. And on this campus, we envisioned MTLE as a pivot point for faculty assistant professors coming in pre-tenure as a pivot point. And they as valuing teaching and learning something about teaching before they get into the classroom or as they're getting into the classroom and making this a fast, efficient, effective starter. That was our byline, fast, efficient, effective starter. And in the meantime, I was also learning, they didn't know anything about the faculty staff conversation, or did they even see any, everybody's professional here. And so I learned a lot about how the conversation gets started about faculty and staff through those assistant professors. It was really interesting. And so I feel like I am I hugely respect the faculty on our campus and the role of faculty at UW-Madison, I feel like I've had really important relationships and enormous respect for faculty and empathy actually for what they're being asked to do, as kind of guiding the university in so many ways. So and the role they play and how they're actually being pulled in so many different directions as the faculty I work with in BioCore as. But as an academic staff person, I've personally experienced a huge amount of autonomy and flexibility in my pursuits. I wouldn't have been able to start MTLE probably if I was in a traditional faculty role. Maybe, I don't know, but I've been able to navigate and be able to do things in a way in my role as an academic staff person that I don't know if I would have been able to do as a faculty member in terms of my time. So I don't know if you have any more questions about that, but I know that I've learned a lot from the faculty I've worked with, and I hugely respect them. And I've been I really appreciate the opportunity that I've had to work with my wonderful faculty colleagues.
I don't have any other questions about that. I do want to ask a couple of questions specifically about academic staff, including the award that you received, the reason why we're interviewing you. It shouldn't be the only reason why we're interviewing you, but that's how we got here today. So the first question is involvement, if any, in academic staff governance or groups.
Yeah, and you know what? I feel silly. When I first looked at this question, did you mean like the academic staff governance and the assembly, things like that, or just any kind of leadership
Right.
in governance service?
Right. Some people have answered it specifically about their work in the assembly or the committees within the assembly. Some people have answered it in terms of their service in general to the campus. So basically, however you want to address this question is fine with me.
Then I'll answer it a little bit more broadly then, because I haven't actually been involved in the assembly officially. I have been involved in, as I said, the teaching academy that I already described, and I've been involved in that mostly in, around the 2010, 20 to 2014 in the actual decision making, where I was working directly with the vice provost for teaching and learning through that role. Then I've been involved in the governance and actually working with folks in the Faculty Senate as we were founding MTLE, and working with the university committee and thinking carefully about academic staff and shared governance a lot. So developing that program and then actually running it for the first couple of years before I kind of moved back into BioCore. I've also been involved heavily in the University Honors Committee, and that has a lot more curriculum associated with it and curricular programs, but thinking about shared governance and what development of outcomes for our honors program. So there. And then I've been involved for many, many years in the Lakeshore Nature Preserve Shared Governance Committee, the Preserve Committee, where that they've got official, guidelines for both faculty and staff. So those are my major, kind of shared governance. I can't remember the faculty committees or academic staff governance, I think you said.
Thank you. I have my mic on mute to try to minimize the background noise. So sometimes There's a little pause. So before we get to your final thoughts, I do want to ask about the story behind the Academic Staff Award. So if you wouldn't mind just sort of narrating that and through that narration, answering questions like, did you know you were nominated, thoughts and reactions when you heard, and then the thoughts about the reception itself.
Yes, I knew I was going to be nominated. I'd actually talked with our executive committee chair, Paul Bethke, and then Jeff Hardin about that, and both my nominees. I talked to them in November about that, and so I knew I was going to be nominated, and then I was really, I met with my nominators, at least with Paul, a couple of times actually before they submitted the package. And so I knew about that. Thoughts when I heard, I was really honored. This was, first of all, I was hugely honored to be even nominated, but I just looked at the names of the other folks that were winning awards in that same time frame, Kevin Nemi and Tom Zinnen and Alberto Vargas, and I mean those folks, have been my colleagues and friends, and I just hugely respect them. And to be among those folks is amazing. It's truly an honor. But I also recognized how happy I am for our program. BioCore is a very small, is high impact practice program, but it's a fairly small program. We don't have a lot of folks. Our name doesn't get out there like some of these larger programs, like the FIGS programs, or like some of the other programs that are, really broadly, both you hear about them through, campus marketing even. And so I was really, really happy that our program could be, highlighted at this awards ceremony. And it's really made me think of how important these awards are for both the individuals and for the programs. And so that was what I was thinking about. So, yeah, it's been really an honor.
And then I know the reception was virtual, so I assume you participated in it. So I wonder what your thoughts were about it, the reception.
It was really nice. Boy, it was fun to get our cheese plate at the door, even when I didn't expect that at all. That was really a nice touch. Of course, I wish it was in person. It would have been really nice to do that. Interestingly, a couple weeks later, I had nominated one of our staff members for that who won an Letters in Science Academic Staff Award. And one thing they did that maybe I don't know if it's possible, but it was really nice as a nominator to be able to introduce my nominee. So I know time is limited, and it's so wonderful to have the chancellor there. I wouldn't want to have the chancellor not do the nomination introductions. But just I was just saying how nice it would be if the nominators could actually say something at the awards. That would be my only suggestion if you're thinking about it.
Yeah, I'll let them. I have no. I just interview the people who win, if they agree to be interviewed. But I certainly will let Leslie, because I'm in communication with Leslie still, on this project, or will be. So I'm just making a note to let her know, because I think that's a great idea too. And there certainly should be a way to do that, and still allow, the chancellor to do the chancellor things. Because I think that's important too, to have them there, whoever they are at the time. Okay, so this is where we get to the final thoughts. Previously, one of the things that you talked about was your work within the teaching and learning community. You want to talk more about that, but I think you can certainly talk more about that if you want, but I think you've talked about that quite a bit in our discussion today. So that was one thing you said for me to remind you. But just in general, if you have any final thoughts, anything else that you would like to say about your time here, before we wrap up this oral history?
Yeah, like, there I wasn't, I hadn't taken any notes, but I about some of these other things, but I did really want to look back, and this is such a great opportunity to kind of reflect on, my 19 years here. And one of the things that really popped up for me is UW is a really, it really is a sift and winnow type of place. I mean, I hope that the university continues to do and allow for grassroots types of ideas to kind of bubble up, because so many of the things that I've been able to do here as a staff member has bubbled up from grassroots, and I would hate to see that ever go away, because we're so concerned about, efficiency and all sorts of things that we can't give space for those really good ideas to be supported and to raise the boat. So that's one of the things. I think, especially learning, continued learning. We're an institution for higher education. And I think in the last year especially, we all should be just humbled by the amazing students we have here that continue to teach us, especially in the area of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And as much as we can, and I'm doing it, we're doing it in our program right now, is elevating those student voices. We really need to hear more from the students about their own lived experience outside the university and bring that forward. And I'm learning so much. My learning curve has just gone, exponential in the last year with diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I think that the high place on the agenda, it's appropriate to put it there. So for lots of personal self-growth. So that's really been there. I have been troubled in the last year about what it seems like to me sitting here in my, remote learning environment. I've been troubled by what seems to be growing administrative structures and and top heaviness. I've been concerned about that every, since our innovations, our ability to innovate and that bubbling up, I'm worried about being overwhelmed by more compliance tasks. And I've already experienced people saying no, just being tapped out. They're just exhausted. And so I'm worried about that growing top heaviness and the continuing asking, because I think it's going to exhaust people. And the innovation that I and the ability to continue to create is going to be squashed in some way or be compromised in some way. So that's one of my concerns. But as just a final thoughts, I've coming back to UW after having been away. UW has been my place where I've grown my career. It's where I'm going to stay through the rest of my career. And I feel really lucky to have been able to do this in my role in my community. I achieved more than I was could even have imagined. And it's because of the people that I've the mentors and the people that I've been able to get to know in this in-person, community-based residential campus that UW is. And it's allowed me to be curious and creative and innovate and make those connections. And so I hope the university can keep that. It's this shining jewel and so important. So yeah, I feel like I'm kind of, I don't know if that's,
Thank you. Thank
I'm
you for
not
your.
dying.
Yeah, no, you are not. These
Oh.
final thoughts, I used to ask about legacy, and then it just seemed,
Yeah.
like I was
Well.
asking people, and I sometimes would say, what would you like on your tombstone if you were to be buried that way?
Yeah,
And that's I
right.
it, it I'm not smart. It took me a while to realize that's probably not the best way to approach these final thoughts.
Didn't know this is going into some archive.
Right.
And oh my
Yes.
goodness, what is it gonna say?
Yep.
I don't want to leave anything to chance here,
Yep.
so
Well, I want to thank you. I do want to talk to you for a couple minutes after we turn off the recording. But this concludes the oral history with Janet Batsley. Janet, thank you so much for the time you gave me in these two sessions. I appreciate it.
thank you. I'm honored.